We are joined by Dr. Alice P. Green, well known as the head of the Center for Law and Justice in the Capital District. And she just released a new book, her memoir, to a certain extent, also a history of Albany and African Americans. It's titled We Who Believe in Freedom, Activism and the Struggle for Social Justice. So, Alice, let's just start off with the general questions about, you know, what prompted you to write the book at this point?
Well, I realized that no one has done this before in the city of Albany. I thought it was time that the community understood the role that certain institutions have played in the life of Black people and how we got to the point where we are right now. A lot of young people don't understand the history of particularly African-Americans. And I really wanted to do that. We're doing an intergenerational movement with Black Lives Matter. And I thought it was really important that they understand where we come from so that they might be able to draw from some of the actions that we engaged in to help them in going forward.
Now, the publisher, and I believe everybody involved with this book, you know, African-American, comes from Kane Jesus Press. And they state, as their description, this inspirational book exposes readers to weighty topics such as police abuse and accountability, criminal justice and prison reform, and historical political abuse of power in Albany. In this book, part memoir and part history, Green demonstrates these topics through her life experience as a longtime advocate, highlighting the impact they had on Albany's Black community since the early days of enslavement up to the present day, where many racial and criminal justice issues persist. So what are some of the African-American, you know, history of Albany that you highlight?
Well, I think the migration of African-Americans to Albany is very important to know about, and the people who led that movement into Albany. And of great interest and concern to me has always been the relationship between African-Americans and the Albany Police Department. There's been a long history of brutality there, and I wanted to make sure that we understood what has happened up to a certain point and how we might engage in action to change that and going forth in the future.
Now, you know, you are well known. I should disclose, I actually, you know, helped rerun, manage your campaign for mayor in Albany when you did that. And yes. Then also prior to that, when you ran for lieutenant governor. But one of the things that surprised me when you ran for mayor was a lot of people would stop the car in the street, not because of your longtime work as a civil rights criminal justice advocate, but because you used to run the Trinity Institute, and you know they would stop to say, you know, basically save the life of my cousin at a terrible moment in their time. And I don't think many people knew sort of that background. I also know in your recent, in the race for mayor, where you did quite well, 25% of the vote as a third party Green Party candidate, you stressed the concept of, you know, Albany is, you know, two cities really divided between, you know, people of color, low income, and then the more affluent. And that's a topic that, you know, the Times Union recently picked up, particularly, you know, South End and Arbor Hill and West Hill. You know, why has there been such this not only systemic long-term racism in Albany, but it doesn't seem to go away?
Well, that's a good question. And we're faced with that not only in Albany, but throughout this country. There's no real firm commitment to addressing a lot of the issues we talk about. You know, too many people benefit from the current condition. They benefit from, you know, racism, discrimination. They benefit from poverty and keeping people under control. You know, redlining was a perfect example you're just talking about. You know, there's a lot of fear and resentment of Black people. Whenever we see historically, whenever we've made some advances, there's always a pushback. And so now we're seeing it's even worse when we're talking about voter suppression. We're talking about vigilantism, which is reoccurring, and white supremacy. So people in power, people with economic and political power, you know, they might voice, their interest in making the kinds of changes that we want to see. But I don't know if there's any really true, strong commitment for making those changes, because too many people benefit. So it's going to be hard to change this system. We have to keep going. We have to keep fighting for it and trying to deal with and make sure people understand what we're talking about when we talk about institutional racism and how it really guides us and keeps us in a situation where we're not able to get the freedom that we're talking about.
Now, my own, sort of awareness to the media of some of the challenges with the criminal justice system in the city of Albany. One thing I always say, a friend of mine got arrested when he accompanied you to Albany Police Court one day at your annual protest at George Pataki, Martin Luther King speech on the death penalty, which you fought long against. But sitting in, I went to court with him, to support him. And it was such, so much apartheid, because all the white men were the judges or the cops, and if there was a white woman, they were the secretaries or possibly the, public defender, and then everybody of color were the ones sitting in, the dockets waiting to be called for being pulled over at 2 o'clock in the morning for not having their belts put on. But, probably the first time I really heard in media was when you and many others began taking up the case of Jesse Davis, who had been killed by the police, an individual with some mental health challenges. Can you run, that through, how that played out?
Yeah, I think Jesse Davis case was really sort of a turning point in terms of activism in the city. We had done a lot of work at Trinity and, and as you mentioned, the civil rights movement had been done and there were some winnings there, but the policing was difficult to deal with. And so when Jesse Davis was killed by police, he was mentally handicapped. The police department knew who he was. And so when he's making a little bit of noise in the street, they took this as an opportunity to brutalize him. And when he wouldn't open the door, they climbed up to the roof and looked into the window and shot him, killed him. And the horrible thing is that they were never held accountable for that. It was a murder, but they were never held accountable for it. And I think the community finally, realized that we had to do something different to monitor what the police is doing, to make changes in the police department. And so Jesse Davis' case became the one that people rallied around to try to make some changes. We've made some changes, but not as many as we'd hoped to. But I think Jesse Davis still stands out there as the signal for all of us to get much more involved, and not just African-Americans, but the entire community, to get more involved in dealing with this issue of police brutality and control of particularly people of color.
We have been talking with Dr. Alice Green, Center for Law and Justice, but particularly about her new book, We Who Believe in Freedom, Activism, and the Struggle for Justice. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. These days, of course, you've been doing this for decades. Now, in the last decade, particularly the Black Lives Matter movement has arisen because, unfortunately, the killing of armed civilians, particularly people of color and low-income people by the police, continues largely unabated, throughout America. How do you, sort of relate to this a new generation in the Black Lives Matter movement? How do you hope that it's, able to move forward and actually, finally resolve a problem that's been in, existence in the United States literally from the moment the United States was created, at least in terms of, white European domination from the Native American?
Well, I'm a believer in people power, so I'm very supportive of the Black Lives movement. I think it's necessary. I think it's the they provide the most hope for change in this country. But I think we have to realize, and I think after, well, in 2020, which you just referred to, with the killing of George Floyd, there was some sense of renewed hope that things would really change, because we found a lot of people getting involved in the movement that had not been before. We were pretty hopeful. Then 2021 came about, and we still saw that not that much had changed, even though we had hoped it would. You know, racism and stereotypes, you know, are still there. The police departments haven't really changed that much. Few cases, and there are very few, where police have been held accountable. We note that the only reason they were is because the case was so clear, because of the use of video. Sort of saw that with the Aubrey case in Georgia. And of course, same thing with George Floyd. But when the cameras aren't rolling, we find that, you know, we're still dealing with this problem. Police unions are extremely powerful, and they've been fighting any kind of change that could take place. And it's very difficult to overcome that, especially in Albany, doing small pieces that could hopefully bring about change. We just recently passed a Proposition 7, which gave more power to the police review board, which was put in the movement against the killing of Jesse Davis, really prompted that call for review board. So finally, after all these years, we've gotten more power for that body to try to hold police accountable. But it's a tough fight, and we certainly don't believe we've won, because police continue to brutalize and control Black populations.
And you mentioned, you know, that Albany did, the voters really, you know, approved, you know, strengthened the Civilian Police Review Board. But at the same time, you know, earlier in the year, the city council, after numerous meetings, you know, did not vote to ban the use of tear gas. And Albany is a little bit more of a liberal city in the Capital District. Saratoga, you know, they seem to be at war with the whole concept of a Black Lives Matter movement. And certainly lots of problems with the police interaction with people of color in both Schenectady and Troy. How is the Center for Law and Justice, and how are community people trying to change this culture, which is still, you know, very tolerant and so, and almost supportive in many cases of the police overusing of force against people of color?
Well, we've been working, doing community organizing. The Common Council membership is going to change to some extent. And I think we're going to have more people interested in working with us to get change in the city of Albany. So we're really excited about that. We still are looking to try to change the way public safety is carried out in the city. We are supporting a bifurcated system where police do their job of law enforcement, but the community becomes much more involved with public safety. So we're doing that. And even when the police went into the South Station to remove the demonstrators, you know, the center was there and it's been there, and we're doing more work out in the community. As a matter of fact, if you look at my book, the cover has a scene from that incident that took place in the South End, where the police tried to cover up their badges and control the population from their demonstrations. And I, you know, decided to say, no, you can't do this. And so the photo that was worked on by this wonderful artist in the South End to show what had happened at that moment, and how the people who were behind the barricade that the police had set up decided to join with me and say, no, you know, the police cannot act in this violent manner in our community. So people are, you know, ready to do things that they think will make a change. And if they work with these new legislators, I think we can see something different happening in the next, you know, couple of years.
I went down after an Earth Day rally after Paul Tonko's office trying to push him on climate change, just as they were clearing out that encampment. And I certainly remember on the television, police being in a line and holding everybody back, and they're not answering your questions. And you should just walk forward and bypass them all. And I guess the police chief came out running to try to negotiate with you. But you mentioned, you know, the cover. Are there other aspects of producing this book? You mentioned it was all done, you know, within the Black community.
Yes, it's totally produced by Black people. Of course, the author, the publisher, the person who did the cover, the printing by Aces Printing, other parts of it, all done by, and locally, we're talking about locally producing this. So I'm hopeful that, the other people will take up some of these issues that I've just sort of mentioned in the book and do more research and writing about a lot of these incidents, and also to talk about how change can come. So I'm really excited that it will spur some interest in doing more investigating and researching and writing. I think that's important when we talk about change.
If one of our listeners out there is thinking about, is this what I want to do with my life, get involved with activism and social change, what message would you have?
Well, the message is that we all need to be involved in this change effort. We're not talking about freedom just for Black people. We're talking about freedom for all people, because I think white people will be free if they don't have to think about being fearful of people, keeping up with stereotypes, being stressed out, and also not learning from the culture and the history of Black people. I think everybody will be free. We have to come together on issues, not only with policing, but environmental racism is a key issue now. And, we need to be together. And I think, Black Lives Matter and all the other groups and organizations that are now thinking about social justice, we all need to come together and make sure that, our Earth survives.
Is there one sort of personal experience as a person of color, that stands out in the book?
Well, I talk to some extent about my early history and some of the racism I experienced in the Adirondacks. And I really wanted people to know about that, because people have great difficulty understanding what Black people are talking about when they talk about racism. And so this one particular incident about being discriminated against in employment and how it made me feel, but it also made me make my own personal commitment to doing work that would provide social change and not to allow people with power to oppress me and take control over my life. So that has spurred me to do all the work that I do with Jesse Davis, all the work we did at Trinity Institution, and being allowed to be involved to help select police chiefs, for instance, I think is critical. So there's a lot that has happened as a result of the work that I do and others to at least get people to think about how important it is to be involved in the whole battle of change. But you have to speak truth to power.
Alice P. Green, We Who Believe in Freedom, Activism, and the Struggle for Social Justice. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.